Welcome to Stockwell Peabody Associates. Some of you are here for the first time, so I want to just give you the lay of land of what's going to happen. The men's room, if you go out the glass doors...
That's important.
To the left, that's where the men's room is. We usually start around now. We'll usually end around 6. We really try to focus on having interaction rather than some smart guy giving a lecture. So the purpose is to have a bunch of experienced and savvy people come and talk with each other. I do want to let you know that there is a microphone. We are taping this, and it will be available on our website, which is called boardoptions.com, and I'll send you all the copies of the MP3 so that if you want to keep it or to distribute it. The focus of Board Options is to allow people who are on boards and CEOs to have discussions about issues about corporate governance in an informal setting. In March, Susan McQuaig of Sircor is going to give a talk on some of the issues that board members should know about post-acquisition integration, particularly on the talent side. February, we're not going to have any program. It just turns out that we're loaded up during we're not going to have a program. The way we usually start is we go around the room. So why don't we start here and just go around the room, have everybody introduce each other, and then I will introduce our speaker.
Good afternoon. Al Barisi, founder and president of Black Knight Associates Executive Search Firm. Primarily focused on the finance side of business. Black Knight comes from my early stages. I'm a West Point grad, did my time in the military, and that's where the Black Knight comes from. Last 17, 18 years, I've been in executive search.
Brett Lesperance, work for Sankey Advisors, the credit debt side of Bain Capital. We manage a portfolio of about $1.8 billion spread across 66 investments. Most of those are mezzanine junior debt investments, but we do have 16 companies that we control and run as equity sponsor, and that's primarily where I spend my time, sitting on a lot of those boards and trying to turn tough situations into better outcomes, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And a lot of what I've wanted to get to one of these meetings for is to hear folks like Ed speak about what they're doing, because a lot of these smaller companies that I've worked with have never had effective functioning boards, and an effective board can be so powerful to an organization. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we're learning here today.
Peter. Peter Goldman. I work on human resources area, Cumberly Consulting. I recently returned from 10 years in New York, working in investment banking and financial services, and Larry was good enough to allow me to come today as I look to expand my network and get better connected in the Boston market.
Welcome back.
I will.
I'm rooting for the Pats in 2 weeks.
That's good.
Paul Castelli. I am founder and managing partner of a firm that specializes in helping companies in transition get from point A to point B. My background is in finance, and I've worked with large multinational corporations and small privately held companies.
And I'm proud to say I'm on college board.
Paul. Sounds like the same name. I'm Paul Cussell. And my background is in low-tech manufacturing, and today I do some consulting. I'm on a number of boards, mostly not-for-profit.
Jeff? My name is Jeff Lucas. I'm the managing director of Neptune Advisors. We work with family and company-held companies helping get them ready to be sold. We often have to deal with family dynamics and board issues, and I'm looking forward to today to learn how to transcend some of those issues to get to the deal matter.
I'm Brian Gleason. I'm a CFO type of technology companies, internet companies, and my last two. I also do software and service type of thing. And this is my first meeting. I'm happy to be here. And I'm also a wannabe jazz guitar player, which is
where I'm from. Hi, I'm Daryl Canfield. I'm a CFO in transition. Background is in public and pre-public companies. I've done two IPOs. And I'm looking for another exciting opportunity to make a difference in a hurry and have some fun along the way. So, delighted to be here.
Alberto.
I'm Alberto Sanzi. I'm a colleague of Larry at Suffolk University in the area of management and entrepreneurship.
one of my specialties, managing family business. And of course, boards in family business are a special kind, so I'm kind of interested to see what the other external view is and take from there.
I am Brad Curley. I'm a retired KPMG partner. I'm teaching at Boston College. Do some nonprofit board work, some work with citizen schools, and I'm hoping to join the corporate board.
I'm Alan Goldberg. I'm an independent risk and business advisory and general law professional. I have my own practice, Triple Advisory Services. So I'm looking to just build relationships in that space with and perhaps collaborate in some fashion. I'm also interested in hearing what Ed has to say, because I have a strong interest in corporate governance and risk and the risk area.
I'm Jay Galasso. I've worked with Paolo, with your enterprise management, where we work with mid-sized private health companies, help them get from, as he said, point A to point B. I do it from more of an engineering and sales and marketing perspective, started out in engineering and kind of moved through into sales and marketing over my career. So we look at manufacturing and technology.
I'm Claude Scheer. I started as an entrepreneur in the media business, ran a company called Ziff Davis for a number of years, and over the last 10 years have started about a half dozen companies, did a little bit of consulting, which I was the accidental consultant as a result of writing an article that appeared in HBR, and I step into private equity and venture-backed companies as a CEO when they're at a moment when they require some assistance from outside the current organization.
I'm Pete Militic. I'm CEO of FinMetrics. It's a company that utilizes advanced metrics to identify and release value for corporations. My background is in finance and engineering, and I'm really glad to be here with you.
I met Ed, I think it was about 2 years ago. I'm on the, in addition to a chair, I'm on the board of a nonprofit called the Center for Innovation and Change Leadership, and Ed is also on the board, and I was very impressed with Ed and his contribution to CICR. So we sort of got to know each other a little better, and I thought he'd be a great resource for this group at this time. Ed is president of GET Advisory Services. He does financial management consulting in the technology and maritime industries. He has, but in addition to his consulting, he serves on the board of companies, both public, private, and nonprofit. He's been a director of S1 Corp. It's a leading provider of integrated banking and payment solutions. He's served as a director of Baltic Trading, which is an international dry bulk shipping industry. He's a director of Sea Change International, which is a leader in the delivery of multi-screen videos. So you've got technology, transportation, technology and financial services.
Correct.
And then research and development at CICL. He began his career at Deloitte Touche. He was spent 9 years in their consulting services organization. Has an MBA from Suffolk University, a Bachelor's of Science in Management from Northeastern University, and like you, he's from in the media industry. You were CFO of Houghton Mifflin.
I was the divisional CFO of one of the largest divisions, excuse me, at Houghton Mifflin.
So, welcome.
Thank you, Larry. That was quite a glowing introduction. I would just start by saying I'm an activist investor, and I'm here to talk about activist investing. Activist investing is near and dear to my heart. It's a very sort of hidden topic at this point in time. It hasn't really surfaced to the degree that I think it will. You know, if you go through all your emails and all the kind of spam you get and see all the various conferences and seminars you can go to, you don't see the topic of activist investing come up much. And it's really kind of very behind the scenes. And hopefully today I can shed some light on it. And, you know, the reason I think it needs to have some light shed on it is because it's growing very rapidly. Just as One illustration, the National Association of Corporate Directors did a survey of corporate secretaries. And in that survey, of the three main concerns the corporate secretaries had for 2012, activist investors was one of those three main concerns. I can also share with you a little bit later some specific data, but I can tell you that between 2010 and 2011, the amount of money invested by activist investors more than doubled, from about 10 or 11 million to over 10 or 11 billion to over $20 billion. So let me just talk about some of the objectives that I have today, and then what I'd like to do is maybe go around the room and see if there are any other objectives people have. As you did your introductions, I noticed that some people had some interest in corporate governance in sort of board structure. Certainly, we can talk about that, but the focus here today is really to talk about activist investors. And with respect to that, what I'd like to do is spend some time talking about what approach a company takes when an actor, an activist investor comes calling. I'd also like to talk about who are these activist investors? What do they do? How do they operate? How do you recognize them? Because they're not easy to recognize. And then I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the role players in a situation with an activist investor. Once a company, a public company, is confronted with an activist investor, what does it do? Who are some of the role players in that process? And how do they engage with the company? And then I'd like to also cover what I have experienced as some success factors in activist investing. In other words, how does a company win when it's encountered by an activist investor? I'll talk about some success factors, and I'll actually ask you to talk about some of them if you have some experiences. And then lastly, I have some resources that I think I have found to be very, very helpful in my own experiences with activist investing. Just before we sort of ask what other people's interests are, I'll just share with you some of my own personal experience. In 2004, I was the CFO of a company called Art Technology Group, based in Cambridge. It was an enterprise software company, and we had just announced an acquisition. And in order to get this acquisition approved, we had to go to shareholders and have a proxy. And in the course of doing that, an activist investor came forward, took a position in the company, and filed a 13D. A 13D is a document that shareholders who own more than 5% of a company file when they want to take more assertive intervention in a company. Usually means that they're hostile, although not all the time. So we ended up in a proxy fight. At first, obviously, we engaged with the activist investor, and then we ended up in a proxy fight. And during the course of the proxy fight, both the activist investor as well as the company needed to go to shareholders to convince shareholders that they should vote in favor of the company versus in favor of the activist. And through that process, I had a lot of dealings with the experience, and fortunately, we were successful at getting shareholders to approve that transaction, and the activists actually lost. After that, you know, the activists sold their position and went away. I would tell you at that time, my view of activist investors was very negative. I felt that a lot of them were just really in it to make a quick buck, and they really weren't looking to truly increase shareholder value. So let me just stop there and just go around the room and see if there are any other topics other than the ones that I mentioned that people would like for us to talk about.
If you could address some of those same issues but divide them by small cap, mid cap, and cap, that would be helpful for me.
Sure. Any other?
Yeah, and this may be not a subject that it's in your zone of expertise, but we do have people in the room that do have it as an area. What happens when you have a family-dominated business, whether it's public or private, and the family gets into one of these things that families sometimes get into? So and it splits the board.
Yes,
Brad. I'd be curious to hear you say I'm an activist investor. I guess I'd be curious to hear you define that. Why you characterize yourself as an activist investor?
That's a good question. Let me respond to that. The way, the reason I feel that way is, first of all, I usually get involved in an activist situation by working with a particular hedge fund. And when that hedge fund calls me, they usually are looking for me to be a board nominee as they approach that company. Usually when that happens, I join a group. And I take an equity stake in that company. And in all the situations that I've been involved in, I've been involved in three so far. But in those three situations, I've taken equity stakes prior to, in effect, joining the board. Then the steps sort of proceed, and usually if, we're successful at getting nominees elected to the board, then I would join the board and, use, obviously, that position to help improve the value of the company. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Any other points that people want to see covered?
Just a follow-on to your thought. As you're describing it, I can see that either being a very strong positive or, frankly, a fairly strong negative, depending on, I guess, more than anything, the motives of the pitch.
Good point.
If they're taking a large position, they want to bring about change right now. Which I'm a transplant from Rochester, New York, so I watched Carl Icahn push Kodak for a couple of years and then sold out his shares. But how do you see yourself in that role?
So I think that what you're describing has been more of the traditional view.
Yes.
Of how boards and C-level executives view activist investors. And I think that there's a new type of activist investor coming forward. And the new type of activist investor takes more of a private equity mindset. So generally what they do is they will take and look at the company. They'll determine first if the company is undervalued. If the company is undervalued, why it's undervalued. And usually what they'll do is once they determine that there's an opportunity to increase the value by approaching the company, they'll then take an equity stake, build an equity stake. And initially they'll go and talk to the company either before they file their 13D or after they file their 13D. Their first approach is not to try to get the stock price up and dump their position. It's really to try to create shareholder value. Okay? I think with some of the newer legislation that's passed recently, I mean, Sarbanes-Oxley passed in 2004. That created some increased flexibility. Certainly Dodd-Frank has had a lot of involvement in terms of proxy access. And I just think that there's more and more opportunities now for people who were shareholders and had no voice in what that company was doing to have more of a voice in how that company is performing. So let's anybody have any other questions or comments? I want to move into the first topic I had. Okay, so let's talk about who are these sort of activists. What do they look like? Let me just start by telling you that. First of all, can I have a show of hands as for anybody who's ever had an activist investor come after their company? Anybody? So you have two? Okay. So usually these activist investors, and again, I'm excluding all the individuals who kind of go through the whole proxy fight process. This is really not the scope of kind of activist investing. But usually activist investors are in the form of either a mutual fund or a hedge fund. And the hedge fund can be set up explicitly for activist activity or it could be set up for other investment purposes. Usually what will happen is a hedge fund or mutual fund will start to take a position in a company. And in some cases, such as the case with more mutual funds, they'll actually write to the company and say they want to nominate directors to be on the board. So they actually will come in and they'll say, we want to put people up for election. In a lot of cases, the company just, you know, won't respond to them. And actually, the mutual fund doesn't really take any more aggressive action. There are also hedge funds that operate the same way. They may be a little bit more forthcoming in approaching management, but they will not really stage a proxy fight. And that's probably the boundary line between what I call passive hedge funds and aggressive activist hedge funds. And, you know, Carl Icahn, who was mentioned, is definitely an aggressive activist investor. So the sort of other type of hedge funds, these aggressive activist investors, they will start by building a position. They will then approach management. They will try to get management to make some changes in the company. Those changes could consist of having their director nominees added to the board. They could consist of having certain aspects of the business improved. It could include even selling off aspects of the business or selling the entire company. And usually, if they're unsuccessful at getting management to, you know, work with them, then they'll take a more aggressive posture by staging a proxy fight. And usually the proxy fight is done in the form of putting up a slate of directors at the next annual meeting of shareholders. So the approach they'll take, these aggressive activist investors, will be to, you know, nominate directors and have, in effect, a proxy fight. So let me ask, in the situations that you've encountered activists, could you share with us kind of what your experience was and how you identified the activist and kind of what happened?
We didn't have an experience like that where we ended up in a proxy fight, but what the reason I was asking about the difference between size companies is we found that in small cap companies, activist investors are they raise the cost of doing business substantially for a small cap company because you're in a constant search for a replacement and often doing financings that you wouldn't otherwise want to do. So,
when you say in search of a replacement?
A replacement investor in order to maintain flow.
So in the case where you were approached by an activist investor, you went out and sought to find an alternative investor to replace that investor.
That's right.
And were you successful?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's time-consuming, a distraction. And I think the part of it that was the most unsettling was that it didn't seem, you know, there was, I would say, insufficient insight on the part of the investor about how the business actually worked. Good understanding of the metrics, but not necessarily a good understanding of the business.
Were they willing to engage with you to educate themselves on how the business worked?
I don't think there's one answer to that because there have been a couple of these waves of activist investors. Some have, others have not. That's not their interest. Is in a legitimate form of dialogue.
In each of these instances, did you have to seek another investor?
Yes.
How many times did you have this happen?
I would say, in some measure, it happens almost every 24 months.
And this was a publicly traded company. And did you learn anything from this experience of
big Rolodex of investors?
Yeah, big Rolodex of investors.
And it's like having a 12-month-a-year roadshow, which is why it raises the cost of doing business so much. It's just a terrible distraction.
Therein lies a key success factor for how to deal with activist investors, which is to find white knights. Find somebody to take a fairly sizable position in your company so that if you are approached by an activist, you have a large block of votes against the activist. I mean, fundamentally, activists do not want to get involved in companies that are controlled by a small group of people, unless they're controlled by other hedge funds that they know. So usually you'll see these passive hedge funds letting an aggressive activist sort of take the lead, and then they'll vote right behind that, you know, that aggressive activist. So the way to prevent that is to have your stock owned by people who are going to be committed to what the board and management team are trying to do. Paul, what was...
Well, I raised my hand before you added some of the qualifiers. At the time, I was the senior officer. It was a New York Stock Exchange company, and it was another company, so it evolved into a proxy fight. So.
It did.
They won.
They won. So there's another...
Well, maybe I shouldn't say one. They took over the company.
They did.
Sure.
So when you say
they won.
So when you say they took over the company, what does that mean?
They acquired. It was U.S. Industries, which was a $2 billion conglomerate, and there was a proxy fight with Hanson PLC, a British conglomerate. I don't know what they made, 10 or 12 billion. And... U.S. Industries came into play because I can't remember the name of the company, but a Canadian company tried it. You know, I think once you're in play once.
So would you say that this was an activist investor, or was it a hostile takeover?
It was a hostile takeover.
Okay, because I mean, if you have someone, hedge funds generally don't want to take over a company. They, you know, activist investors that are mainly hedge funds will generally get involved to take a position, try to force some improvement in the performance of the company, and then ultimately that might lead to a strategic partnership, a divestiture, or something. They don't generally take over and operate the company, whereas other companies will sometimes launch hostile takeover bids and can be quite successful in a hostile takeover bid, especially if they stage a proxy fight.
Yeah. So I raised my hand before you started to qualify it.
I just recently, I'm on the board of a company, Larry mentioned it, S1, where we announced a merger in June of 2011 with an Israeli technology company, and it was a stock-for-stock exchange. And then subsequent to that, the leading competitor of my company announced a proxy fight. They didn't announce the hostile bid, they announced a proxy fight. And as we went to our shareholders, it was very apparent that our shareholders weren't in support of voting against the merger, because the merger was actually quite good for my company. But what it did is it allowed us to give feedback to our investors to tell the hostile bidder to make a bid. And they eventually did make a hostile bid, and they eventually won the company. But it was a nice premium. I mean, the company ended up selling for over a 60% premium from what it was trading for. So for shareholders, it was a positive outcome. May not have been as positive an outcome for the employees of the company, because they'll probably, a lot of them will lose their jobs. But that's an example of a hostile takeover versus an activist investor.
Right. That's more what we were.
Anybody else have any experience with, you know, kind of activists approaching their company, and what types of activists they were?
I have it's actually more an academic question. It's not only you, but everybody. Way back, I think in 1985, Peter Drucker wrote a book. And really, it was about shareholder value. And he was saying, you know, so much institutional money is in the Fortune 500 companies. And the boards say, you know, if you don't like the way we're managing the company, you can just sell your shares and move on and invest somewhere else. Nothing's stopping you. And Peter Drucker would say, but so many of these mutual funds now are basically investing in the S&P 500.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're locked into positions with these large cap companies, and they can't get out. So they're stuck. And so he predicted there would be much more institutional shareholder activism by mutual funds. I don't think that happened. I'm just wondering if...
I don't think mutual funds have been that active in being activist. I think it's mainly been from the hedge funds.
Well,
but a lot of people still have that same point of view, that if you don't like what we're doing, you can say you're stuck. You're stuck and move elsewhere, those that would advocate against it. Obviously,
I Drucker predicted that would change, but it didn't.
Right. I mean, this is a fascinating topic, and it's really fascinating to start to hear insights. But clearly, most of the discussions that I've been involved in have involved board folks talking about how do we inform ourselves about dealing with this, more or less dealing with this pain in the ass that comes along from the activist investing. And that's evolving, but that seems to be the general mindset from my perspective as to what's out there on the company side.
Well, speaking from my own personal experience, and this probably is going to come across in a negative way, I have found that a lot of boards are very entrenched, and a lot of management teams are very entrenched. And you all work with various companies. And what I have observed is that when someone comes along, the board and management team initially just gets their neck up, and they don't want to even engage. And that only serves to really alienate the activist investors even more. And I would say a real critical success factor for encountering successfully an activist investor is to engage and to really, you know, study your opponent. We're all ready to watch a Super Bowl, and we all know about Bill Belichick. You know, he, you know, is a great coach because of the amount of work he puts in studying his opponent and coming up with a game plan. So there are ways to study these, you know, the activist investor who approaches your company, and, you know, try to draw them out. What, you know, so the first thing is to engage. The second is to get them to document exactly what their issues and concerns are. But I have found personally that boards and management teams are entrenched. They're too sort of close, and they, you know, defend each other, and I'm not sure that the directors are independent. They're independent of management, but I'm not sure they're thinking independently in terms of shareholders and shareholder value. So in the cases that I've been involved, the activist has actually done a very in-depth analysis. In fact, if you'd like to take a look, there's a letter that's just been filed on Progress Software that an activist, Starboard Opportunity Fund, just filed. And it's a very short, three-page letter, and it's very compelling that, you know, this company, which is a $600 million company, has one business doing half the revenues and 80% of the profits. And the other two businesses are borderline break-even and losing $50 to $100 million. And there's a question about the value of that company overall because of these two non-performing businesses relative to the business that is doing very, very well. So, you know, that kind of approach is one that I think promotes, you know, the need for activist investing. And it's an approach that I've associated myself with, and I've actually adapted to very, very well. I think it's a good approach. I didn't think that it was, you know, activist investing, you know, was something that I was fond of 8 years ago, when a lot of the Carl Icahns and others of the world would just come in and say, okay, we want you to do a stock repurchase, or we want you to, you know, basically sell off this business. And they really didn't do their homework, as you experienced. So, again, I think that there are different types of aggressive activists. You just need to know who you're dealing with and then what's the best approach to deal with it.
Can I ask you just a real detailed question? If I was interested in public company and I wanted to read a shareholder activist letter like you just, where would I find it?
Well, again, that is a good question. There's a website called Monitor, 13D Monitor, which is, I'll hand out a piece of paper at the end that have some resources. There are three or four websites. And there's actually a website called 13dmonitor.com that is devoted to basically documenting all 13D filings and the sort of activity that goes on associated with that filing. And I don't know, Larry, if you can get access to the letter, but you can certainly see that Carl Icahn initiated a 13D against Genzyme. And then you can go to Genzyme's, you know, website and certainly look for any filings that, you know, that were provided. any letters. I know in the experience I have, the activist investor actually puts out a press release and files a letter publicly, and it gets posted to the company's website. Not the company's internal website, but the Yahoo Finance website. The companies don't want to post these letters up on their own website. So let's talk a little bit about what happens when an activist, you encounter an activist, and how do you deal with that. One of the things that most companies have traditionally done is they immediately go out and hire specialists, advisors. And the advisors can consist of investment bankers, lawyers who specialize in activist activity. It can include IR/PR firms. It can include proxy solicitors. And what will happen is they'll engage an entire team that will help them to strategize how to deal with this activist. I think that those are professionals that need to be hired. I could give you the names of some of the more notable ones. But I think what's important to note is that you can't depend on them to do your work for you. Oftentimes, I find that they're really in business to extend their engagements, so they like to prolong things so that they can obviously... So I think that, you know, what's really critical is the management team and board have to take ownership of the, you know, of the debate, of the discussion. I think that some of these advisors are... very good at what they do, but you just can't let, you have to manage them. I'll share an example with you. When I was dealing with that proxy fight in 2004, we had a proxy solicitor, I won't mention the proxy solicitor's name, and the day of the shareholder meeting, we did not have enough votes to carry the acquisition, to carry the approval of the acquisition. And it wasn't that we had all these votes against. It was that we didn't have enough votes. We didn't have a quorum to have the shareholder vote. So I went to the proxy solicitor and said, "Did you get certain insiders' votes?" There were several million shares, and they said they did. And then when I went, I actually went and called the brokerage that they had their shares held at, and found out that their shares hadn't been voted. That even though, you know, they thought, the proxy solicitor thought they were, they hadn't been voted. So we ended up getting like another 7 million shares voted out of, you know, 70 million shares, which is 10%, which then gave us a quorum and then gave us the support for the proxy vote. So that's an example of when you really don't want to just let them do the, you know, what they're there to do. You want to really manage them and make sure that they're doing their job. The other kinds of advice I would give you, in addition to engaging and listening, is that you should really study the past activity. I mentioned this monitor, or 13D monitor. You should really study the other activist activity that this particular activist has engaged in. How they approached other companies, you know, what did they negotiate, how did they settle, if they did settle, if they went to a proxy fight, how did they do that? So really study your opponent. This may not come across well, but you should really listen to these activists. I mean, if you are approached by an activist who says, just sell your company, I think if it's not in the best strategic interest of your company, then you don't do it. If you get an activist that tells you to do a stock repurchase, if that's not in the best interest of your cash position, you don't do it. But if you have an activist approach you that says you have a business segment that's not performing to industry standards, you should take a look at it. And you should see if you first agree with it, and then if you do agree with it, what actions can you take to address it? And this is, again, I think where a lot of management teams and boards become entrenched. They feel like an outsider shouldn't come in and tell them how to run their business. But the fact is, they own the stock, so why shouldn't they? Some other things that I think are kind of obvious is make efforts to increase your stock price. So if you increase your stock price, then that obviously is going to appease other shareholders who may be upset that the stock prices has dropped in value. You might want to consider taking steps to strengthen your board. Some, again, what will generally happen is the activist will look at the board and look at the performance of board members and try to identify targets of weakness. And you may want to do that assessment yourself, identify those targets of weakness, and then bring new board members on as a means of, you know, extending an olive branch to the activist investor. And if you end up in a proxy fight, which, you know, I will tell you that from the data I've seen, I would say the sort of hit rate or the win rate on a proxy fight from the company's perspective is less than 10%. Less than 10%. So whenever a activist initiates a proxy fight, about 90% of the time they win the proxy fight.
I'm not sure which way. Which way?
The proxy, the activist usually will prevail in a proxy fight, 90% of the time.
How often does the activist
go to a proxy fight?
Go to a proxy.
Probably only about 25% of the time. So usually there'll be some settlement. Usually what happens is the activist will ask for board seats. The company will give board seats either through expanding the board or replacing directors who are up. And then the process will, you know, sort of take a slower pace in terms of the board. And sometimes what will happen is if results aren't achieved in the first year that those new directors are on the board, then in subsequent years, the activist may elect or may nominate additional directors.
How much is the cost of a potential proxy battle? I mean, how expensive is a proxy battle for an activist? Because it's
not that expensive at all.
So you can be a terrorist as much as you'd like to, and you can push around. You specifically.
Well, I think the real limitations for these activists are really the amount of funds they have available in their hedge fund to invest in companies. So, you know, that's really been the biggest limitation because they can't afford to buy majority interest in the company. They only usually buy, you know, somewhere between 5 and maybe as much as 15%. But once they have that investment, the cost of a proxy fight is not that great. All of you have heard of proxy advisors. You've all heard of them, like ISS and Glass Lewis. Again, in engaging with an activist investor, these proxy advisors are very, very important players because they'll take a role in evaluating both sides of the proxy vote, and they'll actually issue their assessment, their conclusion, because these proxy advisors are listened to by institutional investors, other hedge funds. So a company like Fidelity generally votes whichever way the proxy advisor recommends. And if you can really influence the proxy advisors to support your position in a proxy fight, you can then get shareholders to vote in favor of you. Again, in my own experience at our technology, the other side provided some cash flow projections of our business that influenced the proxy advisor to support them informally before they issued their opinion or their recommendation. They shared that with me, and fortunately, I was able to point out to them that those projections were off. And once I discredited those projections and provided my own projections and supported them, they then swayed and went over and supported our side. And that was very instrumental in us getting shareholders to vote in favor of our proxy, vote. So if you end up in a proxy fight, the message is take the fight to shareholders and proxy advisors. Take the fight. And you know, I would agree with you that it can be very labor intensive and it can be costly and it can be a big distraction to running a business. That's why you really have to identify dedicated resources to do it separate from the people who are actually managing the business.
On the, Could an activist investor hire a proxy advisor on the way in? I mean, it seems like
you can't hire a proxy advisor.
Conflict of interest, right? But you can't hire them.
They can't. You can't. The proxy advisors are not hired by either the company or the hedge fund. The proxy advisors are paid by all the institutional investors to basically act sort of as an independent organization in evaluating proxies and determining which way to recommend.
Do you have an opinion about ISS versus Glass Lewis?
ISS is also called Risk Metrics. I think they're both very good. I was also involved in a proxy fight where the activist nominated a whole slate of investors. There were seven members of the board, incumbent board, all were up for election. The activist nominated six directors. So, in effect, the activist was asking shareholders to approve a slate of six out of seven, which would have given majority control of the board to the activist. That would have been unprecedented. I don't think that that's happened to that degree.
But even ISS recommends staggered boards just for that reason.
Right. So in this particular situation, ISS, in their evaluation, would not support all six of the nominees. They only supported three of the nominees. So what they did is they stopped short of giving the activist investor majority control of the board. They instead gave them three of the seven board seats. So I think both of them, Larry, are very good at what they do. They're very good at the amount of analysis and discussions they have with both sides and in their assessment. They have very, very competent people who are experienced business people doing these assessments. It's not academics or consultants or anything like that. These are people who actually have been CFOs and CEOs and companies who are doing these evaluations.
Just a point of information. If you go to Yahoo Finance profile, just Google Yahoo space finance space profile space name of other company or symbol, you will find the ISS rating of the company on the lower right-hand side of the screen. And usually, if it's kind of out of whack, it's something to pay attention to. But that's free.
Just to give you some comparative numbers, I already have kind of mentioned these briefly. In 2010, there were 78 13Ds filed. These are these sort of filings of more than 5% ownership, and the intent is to take some form of action in terms of talking to management or, approaching the company, and it could include a proxy fight. In 2011, there were 82, so it's trending up. The number of activist investors in and of themselves are increasing. So the number of filings have increased, the number of activist investors have increased, and the dollars that these funds have has grown. The average market cap, and this gets back to your question, in 2010 was $1.3 billion, and in 2011 was $2.8 billion. So you can see that activism is now moving upstream. Historically, I think the focus was more, other than a Carl Icahn, the focus was more on small and mid-cap type companies, sub $1 billion market cap companies. And as I mentioned earlier, the level of investors, the dollars invested in new filings, it was $9 billion in 2010, increased to $20 billion in 2011. And the source of this information is the 13D monitor. In order to get on that website, you're going to have to subscribe and buy a subscription, but it's a very good website. I brought along some handouts of these various resources, so let me pass those out now. I think I have 15, so we may have just enough. I'll spend a few minutes talking about G Just one other comment with respect to the proxy advisors, ISS and Glass Lewis. All of their rulings or recommendations are all available on their websites. So if you find that they had another activist investor proxy fight, and it was similar in nature to a situation you're dealing with, you could actually go to either ISS or Glass Lewis and look at kind of what their findings were, what their recommendations were, what the basis of their recommendation was, and so forth.
Let's use Baltic Trading just as an example. If I wanted to see a 13D, couldn't I just Google 13D and then Baltic Trading or the stock?
Well, there's no 13D. 13Ds are not something that gets filed for every company.
Oh, okay.
It's not like an 8K or a 10Q.
So it's not an SEC filing?
It is an SEC. It is an SEC filing, but it's not something that you file for every company. It's only filed when you take more than a 5% ownership. You either have a 13G, a 13F, a 13D. There's different letters that basically have different indications of what your intent of that investment is. Anybody who owns more than 5% of a public company has to file within 45 days after they own that 5% or greater with the SEC.
Even if they intend to take no action, just the very fact that they have more than 5%.
Right. Yeah, there are many, many. Fidelity, you know, has many 13Gs and 13Fs that they file, but it's less frequent to see a 13D get filed. And the 13D usually indicates that there's some intention of trying to confront the company or talk to the company about something. So on this page, I've given you the sort of resources that I identified that I think can help you or anybody you are associated with relative to activist investing. Some are more academic and, you know, informative in nature, like the Activist Investor. This is a sort of a guy, his name is Greg Levine, and he basically writes a lot of papers, and, you know, it's pretty informative to read what he writes, and you might find it interesting. The Proxy Monitor actually monitors all proxy votes. So this would be comparable to ISS, but you can actually look at every proxy vote, every matter that's voted, and you can research it on this site. And then 13D is something that really focuses on activist activity. So I think I've covered what do you do, you know, what approaches activists take. What do you do when you have an activist approach you? What kinds of things you can do? And then what are some of the success factors in, you know, encountering an activist and overcoming an activist? And I've provided you the resources. So are there any other questions, comments?
Good. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Feel free to stay and schmooze. You'll be getting an invitation to our March seat at the table. The topic is going to be what board members need to know about post-acquisition integration of talent.
That's of interest to me. Thank you.
Thank you very much.